Welcome back to Dating Games, the Modern Relationships Podcast. I'm your host, Bobby Temps, and I'm so excited to chat to today's guest as we forge into a new year, which is full of a lot of the same stuff. But today we are talking about a relationship status that is often treated poorly. So see if you can guess which one. Because our guest is host of a single serving podcast and author of A Single Revolution, Don't Look for a Match, Light One. Please welcome to your ears, Shani Silver.
Thank you so much for having me.
You're very welcome. I've been saying to you off air how much I've been looking forward to your chat, having heard you first on Damona Hoffman's podcast, past guest.
I love Damona. We've been on each other's podcast at this point, and we have so many aspects of how we approach singlehood and relationships that differ, but it's whenever we get together and chat, it's very much a holding space for both, and that gives me hope that there's room for a variety of approaches and perspectives when it comes to singlehood and dating, and I really love chatting with her.
Yes, and I'm always up for that in what feel like very divided times. Like, please, just people that get along. She even said that, I think, in her show when she was interviewing you, that if people looked at your like online personas, they would assume you would not be friends because you're so opposite. Certain things like using dating apps, you're quite polar opposite on, and I'm sure we'll chat about that in a bit. But first, you have a dating story of your own share?
So I have an answer to this question, and it's this. I no longer tell dating stories. I do not go back through my archive. I don't replay trauma. I don't tell horror stories for entertainment, because if they were good stories, I'd have a partner right now. But unfortunately, all I have to offer you are stories that are very difficult for me, painful, that take me back to something that was really unpleasant and difficult to live through. And I think that's something we forget in the dating space, certainly in the singlehood space, is that our lives, what we go through in dating and in being single, that's not entertainment. And so often when we're at dinner or at brunch or just like casually hanging out with friends, our lives as singles are supposedly an open book. And supposedly something that anyone can ask any question they want about at any time. And I have to be a part of contributing to a narrative where singles have privacy, because we so often think of couples in our minds and imagine, you know, it's none of our business what happens behind closed doors, but single people's doors close too. And for me, telling stories from my dating past, it's feeding into narratives that I don't respect. Because there are so many voices and podcasts and books and blogs and Instagram accounts that are telling dating horror stories. So I no longer tell stories about dating as they pertain to, you know, generating topics of fun conversation or humorous conversation. That's not what I do. But I do discuss singlehood and its positives and its benefits and its funny moments all the time. So that's really where I like to spend my time when I'm discussing this topic. But yeah, the dating stories are no longer something that I share.
Wow. I think I kind of needed to hear that, because perhaps like you, hosting a show that relates in any way to dating, you can feel a little bit like you are asking to be a sounding board for everybody else's perceptions. And I regularly, far more than, I mean, I was always someone that enjoyed talking about dating and relationships, but it's definitely more so since starting this show, I am seen as some kind of like single person oracle, where I've got to be like, so what are the single people doing? What are the ridiculous stories this week? And so instead, are you up for telling me some of your take on why you think so many of these horrific stories come about? Because you are certainly not alone. Like, I mainly interview comedians on this show, and plenty of them tell incredibly funny stories and even realize sometimes halfway through the story of, oh, this is actually quite traumatic now that I like tell it in this full form way and have to remember it.
I think humor is a wonderful way to process things, especially painful things. It's the old moment during a funeral eulogy where someone from the family tells a funny story and everyone has that moment of catharsis and feels much better. So humor is definitely a way to process things that happen in the singlehood space. I do it all the time. At least I try. I have no idea if I'm funny. Like, you can't tell yourself if you're funny, whatever. Like, yeah, I think where it comes from, where
where the culture that we are dating in now, it's become a space where horror stories are no longer the exception, they are the rule. And the success stories or the people that actually partner, particularly people that actually partner from dating apps, are the exception. That's sort of how we've flipped that, unfortunately. And where the horror stories come from is that we've allowed a culture to grow around them. We've allowed it to happen. We've encouraged it to happen by turning them into jokes and memes. We fed that beast. We did it ourselves. And we did that very honestly. I want to say that for sure. Because the way we got here, I think, is that we were doing something really human. We were trying to find love. And we were trying to find partnership. We were trying to find companionship. And someone came along and said, hey, it's hard to meet people. I can make that easier. I have this thing called the internet, and I bet we can use it as a tool to help people find each other. But the internet is still a baby in terms of human history. And it's a toy that did not come with instructions. And we have no idea yet the long-term effects of, let's say, a decade on dating apps like I spent. And we're not taking care of ourselves within dating apps. We're not taking care of our users in terms of the dating apps themselves. I think a subscription to a dating app, if you're paying for it, that should come with a therapist. And it doesn't. It doesn't. It just tosses you into this dumpster fire full of thorns and bees and tells you to, you know, do your best. And it's just a space that's very private. What happens on dating apps are very private. People can tell you things privately or send you pictures of things privately that, you know, their boss is never going to see. I really wish we lived in a culture where before someone could send a message on a dating app, they had to tweet it first. I wish there was that kind of accountability, but there's not. It's zero accountability, zero consequences, total privacy, and things get weird. They get very weird. They get very, I mean, I don't have to tell your audience what they're like. This audience knows they're on dating app, but I'm not. I haven't used a dating app in almost 3 years to the day, and they've been the best, most productive, happiest, most creative years of my life.
Wow. There we go. Well answered. I love that. I should have mentioned earlier that we give points on this show. So there's some points right there. The sound effect will be edited in later. And so what was I going to say there? That's something I've never really thought about. The idea of like paying and how the service should include some kind of communication of any kind from the people that make the app, some kind of actual accountability of interacting with their users. Because even if it wasn't a therapist, like, good luck getting in touch with Tinder customer support, if that even exists. You know, I know you can report things, but you know, maybe that some of us want to ask, like, okay, I keep being sent this kind of message, how can I deal with that? Or I'm finding that I keep matching with the wrong kind of people. Can you do a review of my profile? And I know that a lot of dating coaches, I know it's something that Damona does as well, that's become a big part of their service because people aren't sure where else to go. And they're like, this is such a big part of how people meet each other nowadays. And yet, where do I go for another human being to have a look at my profile who isn't a biased friend or family member and give me some, you know, real statistically backed or whatever else information on how to improve it?
Well, unfortunately, you had to endure something terrible first. Before you can report someone, something terrible has to happen to you. So you had to live through that first before you could even report it or block someone. Instead of creating a safe space where these things don't happen in the first place, we've created a safe space for them to happen. And the people who endure things like unwanted photos or unwanted messages, or even just, I think we forget how much it can weigh on us to like flip through profile after profile after profile that's just so offensive. And there are so many. And I don't say all of this to be like super negative and tell people they're never going to find love. I happen to think that we all will if we want to. I just don't think dating apps are how we're going to, like, he's not in there. I'm sorry. Can I just say that out loud? Like, he's not in there. Can we start just saying that more often? He's not in there. I did it for 10 years. I didn't have one relationship result from dating apps in 10 years of use. I mean, that used to make me so mad. And like, maybe you're going to ask me this question later. I don't know. But I will say this at every opportunity that I have to say it. Dating apps are an industry that is incentivized to never work for the people using it. And I can't think of any other industry like it except for gambling. Because when you think about it, the day that you actually meet someone off of a dating app, that's the day that they stop making your money. Why would they want that? Why would they ever want you to meet someone and stop giving them money? They make more money the longer you're single. And for those of us who have been using these apps for years on end, you can reflect on how true that is. Because have they worked for you? Have they helped? Have they given you anything positive at all? Or have you just been giving them money year after year after year on the gamble that maybe eventually you'll meet someone? My eventually ran out at 10 years. I don't know how long it is for other people.
No, I think that's very fair. And this is something I've actually not talked about on the show before, but this was a big motivation for starting this podcast, was that there's absolutely such a culture of sharing these horror stories like we've talked about earlier, and it's a way of coping with it. And I think particularly I see this more so among women, and I have had plenty of female friends of mine feel comfortable enough to show me the kind of messages they receive. And I was less and less shocked the more I saw this. But as a man, even though I date people of all genders, I just hadn't been treated in a certain way. Irrespective of the gender of the person I was dealing with, I hadn't been receiving certain kind of messages. And that's, you know, the stuff that is overtly abusive, but that's also the stuff that is more insidious and manipulative, like when people are like intensely like love bombed, or have people come on like incredibly like needy and inappropriate straight away. Like other men are not approaching me and being like, I just need a prince like you in my life. And, you know, I'm so glad that we met on here. I can't imagine not talking to you after we've talked for 24 hours. Like, guys aren't showing that self to each other. Do you know what I mean? Yet women do see that kind of thing. And so part of it was a lot of men don't realize, and that can be part of the problem. If you don't realize what that behavior is coming across like, well, how do you know you're not doing it? And so I wanted to partly have these conversations to shine a light on what I was seeing and being shocked by. And I think another part where gender plays into it, and it's always a little bit weird when I talk about gender loads, because I'm someone that doesn't really believe in it a huge amount. I'm like, I believe in sex differences on a biological level, but I believe most of gender is made up and I don't conform to it too strictly myself. However, the way we are socialized is still a big factor when it comes to all of this, and gender is a big factor in that. And so one of the things I've heard you talk about very articulately is how we are treated so differently in terms of single shame, that can be across the board, but men and women receive different versions of it. And I think this is part of why the apps are so powerful, because the apps are telling you they've got all the answers. And the rest of the world is being like, have you tried the apps? It must be something you're doing wrong, because single is bad.
Because single is bad, right? Yeah, I think the giant elephant in the room is that single is not bad. And as soon as you start to understand how good singlehood is, and that appreciating and enjoying your singlehood doesn't preclude you from future relationships, as soon as you start to understand these things, the apps become irrelevant. A sense of calm and comfort and joy takes place in your singlehood, and using a dating app becomes laughable, because when you love your singlehood, you no longer spend, you know, buckets of money and so much of your free time trying to end something if you don't think it sucks. It's just, there's a core belief that we've been socialized into, and that is couple good, single bad, but it's lying. And I'm tired of people not decentering romantic love and relationships and start centering themselves, start centering everything they do have in the moment rather than focusing on the one thing that they lack. Because when you take away the socialized belief that being single is a wrong way to be and start seeing proof for yourself that being single doesn't suck, because that proof will show up really fast as soon as you start allowing it to. As soon as you let that good in, using a dating app and subjecting yourself to the things that happen within it, subjecting yourself to the societal shames of being a single woman, because a single woman is a burden and a single man is a catch, right? To be completely generalizing and super hetero, that's sort of the adage. But when you love your singlehood and appreciate it for all that it contains rather than fearing it for the one thing it lacks, you don't use dating apps anymore because you don't feel like you need to. You don't feel compelled to voluntarily walk into the lion's mouth because there's nothing to walk away from.
Yeah. And here's something to admit to you. I very much feel that way currently, but it feels weird even to admit it. And part of that is because I'm aware of how many people nowadays, including plenty that I know, meet through the apps. I've met people and had relationships through apps in the past. I felt that, you know, maybe I need to err on the side of optimism all the time on a show like this, you know, that a lot of people are using the apps. And particularly with COVID as a big factor, that can feel like a bigger part of the pie slice of what options are available to us. And coming into this new year, I didn't even celebrate New Year. It just is on my mind because it's just everybody wishing you New Year's, whether you celebrate it or not. Anyway, I have been feeling recently that I don't know if I can keep that up anymore. I don't know if I can keep up that positive bias because there is so much wrong there. And I think a lot needs to be called out. Do I think dating apps are going to go? No. But would I like them to change fundamentally across the board in so many ways? And then maybe we allow them to stay and we give them a bit more of our time and money? Yeah.
I mean, here's the thing. Success stories are used as bait, right? We all know somebody who met their spouse on a dating app. But when you think about the thousands and thousands and thousands of people who haven't, they're allowed to matter too. And what's allowed to matter more is what's happened to you on a dating app. If you have been using it to find partnership and you haven't found partnership, you get to give value to your personal history, not just the personal history of someone else. It's not only other people that matter. It's what happened to you that matters too. And no one wants to hear it out loud, and maybe fewer people want to say it, but dating apps don't work for everyone. There is a significant chance that they don't work for you. I know for a fact they don't work for me. I gave it 10 years of data collection, and I can tell you, without a doubt, dating apps don't work for me. But that's just me. I think everybody has to come to their own conclusion on that, but I wish that more of us would stop ignoring our personal history with dating apps.
And I don't even think that is just you. I think they're not working as well as anybody would like, even if you are having success on them. I mean, there's those people that even meet somebody on their first day. I've heard of them. I know that those people are out there. However, you know, there were probably still parts of the app they didn't like. There was probably a horrible message they got from somebody else alongside the nice message of the person they ended up with. And so I agree, there's so much that needs to change. And I'm currently in a stage of I just am not interested in it. I've got so much going on in my life already. And I do enjoy being single, and I often feel the need to say that, which is also its own thing, because it's such like feels so counter narrative. And yet, like you say, the narratives that we're used to are so wrong. You know, how many like there's all these stats about most marriages end in divorce, and yet supposedly marriage is this big like milestone that we all need to have. It worked out for so many people, but that doesn't mean it's any kind of guarantee, you know, in the same way, like if you're getting into a relationship, most of the relationships end in breakup. Some of the relationships you stay together forever and they end in death. So I think I'm allowed to be cynical, and yet we are against the grain on this stuff. And something you talked about on your podcast a little while ago is the kind of ways in which you hear this from people who try and How can I say it? Fix, I guess it feels like they try and fix your singledom with a sentence or a diagnosis. And so the one that I think you mentioned in the episode I'm referencing is people saying, oh, maybe you're just too picky. And I have heard that one talked about a lot. And yet, even though it's so commonly said, it can be difficult to even know what to say to that because it can actually resonate in such a hurtful way. And yet somebody might treat us like we're wild if we challenge it.
There are a lot of ways to challenge your too picky and the salty, I'm exhausted today, I can't deal with you sort of clapback answer to you're too picky is, oh, so you weren't? I mean, if I'm too picky, you're married. Does that mean that you did? Did you just settle for the first person that showed up, or did you have preferences and desires and connection and chemistry? Did you want all of that? And did you actually find it? And isn't that why you're married? So why can't I have that? When I'm tired, that's the answer I give. When I have energy, heaven help you, because there is so much more to say about this. You're too picky is the same thing as telling someone they are unattractive and undesirable to their face. It's the same thing as saying, well, you're aging, so your value's going down, and you should really take what you can get, especially if you're a woman. Yeah. You're expecting too much. You can't have that because I've decided you can't have that for whatever reason happens to be in my head, even though I'm not in your life. No one else is living your life but you. No, your life does not affect anyone but you. No one has a dog in your fight. So for someone to give you directives or advice, why? It's so consequenceless, because if they give you advice and you take it and it works, they're a hero. If they give you advice and you take it and it doesn't work, you just weren't following my advice correctly. That's why it didn't work for you. It's consequenceless, and it's often just pulled out of someone's ass, and it's just, it's so seemingly done from a good place, and I'll put good place in air quotes there, but really it's just offensiveness on top of offensiveness, on top of dismissiveness, on top of belittling, on top of shame. And you're too picky. I have a very hard time with that because I remember what it feels like. I remember what it feels like intimately. I remember how often it's still said to people I care about. I remember how often it's said to people in my audience. And it hurts me secondarily every time it's said to someone else. It's implying that there is an urgency. There is an urgency to solving your singlehood. Your singlehood is wrong. Your singlehood is a problem. And you are preventing this problem from being solved by wanting more. You should want less. And as soon as you want less, then this problem will be solved. Because I've decided that's what's standing in your way of finding love, is you are standing in your own way. That phrase can die in a fire. I cannot stand the assumption that if someone is single, they're doing something wrong. And if somebody is coupled, they've done something right. When in reality, it's all up to luck and chance and fate and timing and the universe, whatever you believe in. This isn't something within our control, and this isn't a skill set. Partnering isn't a skill set. It's luck. And I know that that makes people and couples feel a little less valued, but how do you think I've felt for the last 14 years of my life every time I'm shamed?
Also, I just don't think it's that different being in a relationship, having been in and out of them enough years of my life. Who loves complaining about dating single people? Who loves complaining about relationships, people in them? Like, that you complain about what you're in. And I absolutely agree. It's such an offensive phrase that can be said so flippantly because it's such a part of the dominant cultural narrative. And whilst you were talking there, I was thinking of, okay, what are like other parallels? And one that came to mind was like one we hear more so nowadays than when I was growing up in politics, which is somebody is upset by something that's happening that's affecting their life, whether that's rhetoric, whether that's laws being passed, whatever it is. And people can so often, particularly those that are in positions of power or are with the party that is currently in power in terms of their politics, they'll say, maybe you're being too sensitive. It feels like that in terms of the, oh, your experiences are secondary, because a lot of people agree with me.
And you can't blame someone for something that isn't wrong. So their arguments fall apart. I'm tired of it. I'm tired of the shame and the blame about something that isn't wrong, about something that people are often jealous of. Sorry, you can't make me be ashamed because I know that I'm in a wonderful position, just as people in relationships are also in wonderful positions. And why can't both be equally valued? Why can't both be equally joyful and fulfilling? Because they are. It's just, why aren't we discussing them like they are? Why aren't we believing that they are? Why are we still buying into a fairy tale that doesn't exist? Maybe it just makes us feel better about relationships to see them as superior because there's so much work. like there's this reward for all this like work there. You know what I mean?
It's so strange. And like you say, it makes no sense because if nothing else, we need single people because otherwise there is no new relationships, new marriages.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen, brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
I mean, would you and I even think about our singlehood if we didn't have podcasts about it? I wouldn't. I would just be living.
Yeah. I never even thought of that. No, it's true. And I mentioned earlier about like saying that I'm happily single. I hear myself say that back on the show too many times and it annoys me. And yet I feel so often like I do have to make that disclaimer because maybe a lot of people do assume, oh, he's doing a show like this. He talks about relationships all the time. And actually, where I'm at right now today, 3 of my closest friends have recently got into relationships. I'm so excited. They sound really healthy. I'm now thinking, have they met on apps? I think one of the 3 met on an app. But it all sounds like healthy stuff, how they started. And I'm so excited for them. And that kind of makes me feel today, that's enough. That's enough relationship success, vicariously through them. I'm looking forward to meeting their partners. I love hearing about it. Strangely, people ask me for a lot of advice. Happy to give it. happy to hear you. I called a friend the other day and he was like, thank you for listening to me like gush about this guy. And I was like, of course, this is lovely. I want to hear about how happy and excited you are. Because that's the stuff we should be celebrating, not the binary of, are you in a relationship or not? And, oh, look at us on our soapboxes. This is why I wanted to talk to you. I was like, I know.
You're doing such a good job, though. You're doing such a service to people by erasing that jealousy narrative. Because everyone's anticipating that you would be super jealous of all your friends who got into relationships. That narrative is another thing we don't have room for. It's just not true. I need to hear stories of how people met. And I need them to be real and honest and so far beyond just meeting on an app, because that's the truth too. You said 1 out of 3. That's pretty good odds to me. And I would like to hear the other 2 stories, because I have a theory that if you were to interview 100 or 1,000 couples, you would get 1,000 different stories of how people met. And I think we need to hear them because I think they're reminders. I think they're reminders that we get to exist outside of our phones. We get to meet people outside of our phones. It happens daily. It happens by the hour, but we're forgetting because we just keep believing in these dating app success stories because, first of all, it just sounds easier than meeting someone in real life. It sounds faster than meeting someone in real life. And if we hate being single, we want someone just as fast as possible. You know what I mean? It's like, it's not, we're not limited. We're not limited to just dating apps. We are, our future relationships are infinitely possible because anyone can meet in any way imaginable, and they do all the time. So you're doing a huge service to people by hearing those stories and debunking that jealousy narrative.
Oh, thank you. Also, I'm thinking before anyone DMs me wondering how the other 2 met. So one of them, they got together through friends. They met a new friend and they met one of their friends. And the other one was through work, not someone they were working directly with, but someone they met through a work friend. So I guess meeting through
classic.
Friends is 2 out of 3.
Tales old as time. Classic. I love it.
Yeah, love see, it's still possible, even in the pandemic. And another one that I did write down, so I'm not going to forget this one. He says, remembering that we're going to edit out the bit where he forgot what he was saying. Anyway...
Leave it in. They love it. Are you kidding? Leave it all in.
Yeah, this is the problem of like co-editing your own show. I was recording with a friend the other day, and Nina, the listeners will hear that episode soon. And we know each other really well and we're both podcasters, but she'd never like recorded with me before. And she was like, you just start sentences again. you just like restart it. You're like a robot. And I was like, yeah, it's just practice. And it's because I hear myself back and I'm part of the editing process every week. So I don't want to hear me fumble a word. I'm just going to start again. And I forget that that is novel because me and my co-host, we just do that all the time. Anyway, podcast nerddom aside, the other thing I've got written down here is something that I'm interested to know if you hear this, because I don't. I don't know why you're single. Has that phrase been said to you?
Oh, that old chestnut. Yeah, of course. I can't believe you're single. Oh my God, I have no idea why you're single. No, you don't. You don't have any idea. Because if you're saying that out loud, you don't know what it's like to be single in 2022. You don't know what it's like to be single over 35. You don't know what it's like to be a single woman past the age where she thought that she would have a partner because that's what she was raised to believe she'd have. The why, again, there is no why for something that isn't wrong.
Again, it's that assumption of a binary. Because even talking to you, I can feel that boiling up in the back of my brain of being like, you're such an incredible catch. I'm getting on with you so well. And that is genuine.
Thank you.
But then when we have phrases like that come up in our mind, it's through the lens of this binary narrative. And I find
it's narrative. It's super gendered. It's very ageist. It's, I mean, I can't speak beyond my perspective, but I think it's pretty hetero. I don't know. But yeah, it's, I want this to stop being seen as a compliment. It's not a compliment. It is a, you are showing your lack of understanding and lack of perspective. And you are also immediately asking a single person, most likely a single woman, to defend herself, to tell you horror stories of how hard it is in the dating space. And I'm single because this is how hard it is out there. And then give proof so that they actually believe you. Because in that moment, you feel like it's your responsibility to make someone believe that it's been so hard that someone like you would still be single. It's a hugely defensive position to put someone in. And we don't deserve it. I mean, there are countless questions that I won't answer anymore, but I know that there are people who haven't yet practiced that talent. And I would encourage people, if someone says, I can't believe why you're single, or why are you single, or how are you still single? Just ask them immediately, what do you mean by that? Make them think about why they're saying it. Make them think about why they're asking. What do you mean? Why did you say that? What makes you say that? And just put it right back on them. If they can put you in a weird position, you can do the same. You're not being rude. You're being reciprocal. Just give it a shot. Give it some practice. You don't have to answer this question. It is not your responsibility.
Yes. More points. So many good points being made. And I'm really glad that you phrased it in that way, because I've never quite thought about it like that. And a lot of my viewpoint on the world works in kind of parallels, that if I can figure something out in one situation, then I try and apply that in other ways. And the parallel you reminded me of there is with racism, that so often that is the expectation, that if you talk about an experience and people don't understand it, they then want you to give evidence via trauma that you've been through. And yet, I would hope enough of us have an awareness in this day and age that we wouldn't say what I'm now thinking might be the equivalent phrase in that situation, which is, no, I don't believe that anyone would be racist to you. Right?
I wish we could just erase certain sentences from human conversation, but we can't. So it is important to say what you just said over and over and over, as often as we need to, as loudly as we need to, because there are certain things that aren't ours to say, to question, to demand explanation for. Yeah, we can, let's just stop with that. Let's just stop. How about we stop?
And so the final thing I want to talk to you about before we start wrapping up is how great singledom can be. Let's be a bit of the counterculture today. So like I said, I'm in a place at the moment where I'm happily single fairly consistently. Sounds like you are as well. We find so much joy in it. And that is not mutually exclusive with being open to a relationship. I guess if I would phrase your approach, it's that you are open, but not necessarily searching.
I mean, that's absolutely it. And that's something that we have to discuss a little bit more loudly, because we've been fed two narratives, right? You're either single and on the hunt until you find someone, no matter how much it exhausts you or frustrates you or disappoints you. You can either be single and searching, or you can be you know, that marry yourself, swearing off dating, ridiculous line in the sand that no one asked you to draw. But there is a middle ground. There is a middle space where you can be single. And that word is said with positivity in your voice. You don't even have to characterize it as happily single. You can just start saying the word and have that not be immediately viewed as a negative. And there's nothing about that enjoyable single life that precludes you from a future relationship. There's nothing about enjoying singlehood that prevents you from partnering.
Well, if anything, it's part of it, because people want to see someone that is living, you know, quote unquote, their best life and seems happy, because that is attractive. People that have it together and are working on themselves and are independent. These are things that are selling points when you're looking for a relationship with somebody.
For sure,
else.
But they should never be done with that intention. There's a terrible habit in singlehood of doing things that are actually for ourselves, but in the back of our mind, it's really so we can meet someone. It's that old narrative of like meeting someone at the grocery store. You don't go to the grocery store to meet someone. You go to the grocery store to buy eggs. Like, just stop assigning secondary goals to things. It's just, it takes away from the primary goal. So there's, you know, there's no hidden agenda to the way I live my singlehood. It's just allowed to be good for good's sake. And I like talking about it because I like reminding people that it's possible to thoroughly enjoy this life, genuinely enjoy this life, and not some version of it that's like good enough for a single girl. My life is not a consolation prize version of what it could be if I had a partner.
Yeah. Yeah. And I'm just thinking now, something you've reminded me of is like, what am I like when I go to the grocery store? And I guess a lot of the time I'm in a mood because I've run out of milk, or, do you know, it's like one thing that I'm missing is the only thing that I need. And so I'm having to make this journey for that. And let's say I'm starting my day and I'm getting dressed with, oh, I've got to go do this before I do anything. I will often present myself, I think, in a way that is purposely not approachable. Do you know what I mean? And I think that is quite fun to normalize, even in yourself, is like, I've got a jumper that says Vision on it, and I find it to be arrogant, and it's like bright orange and bright blue, and it's very tacky, and that is why I bought it, because I was like, if I don't want anyone to talk to me, I'm wearing that jumper.
It's your armor. It is your armor. That is allowed. I don't want people to talk to me at the grocery store. The grocery store is my church. I am an avid cook. I love going to the grocery store. I love searching for ingredients. I love buying weird things in jars. That's my time. And I don't go to the grocery store to meet someone. Also, it's just, seriously, that only happens in like a rom-com. That's really where that's going to happen.
Yeah. But it's that thing. We feel like you have to be approachable all the time. You know, yeah, I think this is one of the symptoms. Yeah, you don't. Because again, it's that thing of like, oh, because of what? Somebody's going to tell you you weren't making an effort, or, you know, maybe if you did your hair before you left the house, or like,
do you know how many people have met looking absolutely rancid at the gym? Like, I don't buy it. I don't buy these nonsense narratives. I really don't.
I have so many unattractive hats. And honestly, if I pair a beanie with sunglasses, like, it's whatever. I have a lot of hair. It's whatever will fit over all my hair. And then it doesn't matter what the fuck is happening, because it's naturally curly underneath. And I put a beanie on and I put shades on, and all that happens is people look at you sideways a bit because they think, oh, maybe he's a celebrity.
I mean, maybe you are.
This is what I mean. It's, you do not have a big negative reaction. You just have people being intrigued.
Absolutely.
So, quick fire. A few more things that are really fun about being single. I love that I can go and do things on my own. And that a lot of people are surprised by that, even like shocked that I would go and get food by myself. That feels like a strange superpower via the lens of other people's surprise.
Yeah, the ones that have never done it are going to feel that way. The ones that are very afraid of doing it. And by the way, I respect that fear. You don't have to go eat alone if you don't want to. But the ones who have never done it will look at you in awe for doing that. But once you do it, you realize that there's nothing inherently shameful or wrong or conspicuous even about eating alone or going anywhere alone. It's just lovely. You are good company.
Thank you. Wasn't a compliment, but I'm going to take it as one. Go on, you give one. Another fun thing of being single.
Oh, mine are so practical. I love getting the bed to myself. Absolutely love it. I am an absolute starfish. And other things, there's a lot of around the house stuff that I think we ignore. The temperature in the house is to my liking. The fragrance in my house is to my liking. The music in the house, similarly to my liking. I haven't said the words, I don't know, where do you want to go to dinner in 13 years? And that is just so joyful for me. There's just such a lack of compromise. There is no need to compromise. And some people will call it selfishness, but who the hell is around to notice that I'm being selfish? It's not selfishness if you're in the room alone. It's just you living authentically. That's all that is. Yeah, there's so much freedom and there's such a lack of compromise. And one thing that I've had to really get cognizant of, because I know that eventually I will be in a relationship and I'm going to use this as an indicator of whether or not that relationship is right for me. I used to feel at all waking hours of the day that I was responsible for the other person's mood and the other person's comfort and the other person's happiness. Like at all times, I had to be gauging like where they were at. And any time I feel that way, now I know that that's anxiety and that's not the right relationship for me. When I have a sense of ease, when I don't feel like I'm responsible for entertaining this person 24/7, that's the relationship I want.
Yes, exactly. And a lot of that comes out of fear of they'll leave me. I'll do the tiniest thing and they'll leave me. And first of all, that's not the person you want if that's how they're operating. And secondly, being left, we've all survived it.
The good time. Are you kidding? Go. Go.
I'm also, this is a side plot, but like I'm really for like owning that as well. Like I will call my friends on it when they talk about being broken up with and then 2 months later they mention it and it was a mutual decision and it somehow changed in their mind. I've been broken up with so many times. I've broken up with other people. Like that is a part of the truth of how it ended. And I think own that.
That's okay.
And also what you said is kind of similar to the last one I was going to give, which was about I enjoy not being around a person who has an expectation that they are the number one most important person in my life constantly. Because I don't know if that's ever realistic, but if it is for you, I think it's very much something that has to be really earned. And we can have this idea that you're in a relationship with somebody and as soon as it's official or whatever stage and box is ticked, then suddenly they go above all of your friends and your family. Maybe your mum is allowed to compete with them and you've got to live your life with them in constant consideration. And like you say, it's exhausting. And I think it's right that that should be conditional and not.
Yeah, you and everyone else, myself included, came by that narrative very honestly. That was fed to us. I mean, romantic relationships have been over-prioritized when compared to all other relationships our entire lives. Every movie, TV show, song on the radio, book we've read, certainly fairy tale we've read, has just idolized romantic love and partnership and marriage and family. It's been so, so blown up in our mind. Of course, it's got a sense of imbalance to it, but that doesn't mean we can't rebalance things for ourselves in a way that feels more authentic to us.
Mm-hmm. So with that in mind, we'll move on to our rules of the game. So is there something you would recommend trying to live by in dating or relationships is how I usually phrase it. But maybe today we have single ones.
So I wouldn't change your question, but I will say that my answer has to do with the fact that it's not a game. It's not a game at all. The culture that we are living in, that we've all contributed to, that is no one's fault, that is the collective, the dating culture that we live in, has made it a game, has made it a, you know, this cheeky like hunt and has turned it into fodder for reality shows and made it so that single people are kind of the new gladiators, right? Like what won't they do on live television to potentially find a partner? But this isn't a game. Love isn't a game. Companionship isn't a game. Friendship, companionship, is someone with you for your day-to-day existence, is someone building a life with you. That's not a game. And I don't treat it like one. I treat it with a great deal of sincerity and honesty and authenticity. And that for me is missing when we turn it into a game, when we think of dating as a game, when we think of, you know, here's some dating advice, like try these tips and tricks for dating. Why? Why isn't the way that we naturally show up in the world and naturally show up in the dating space precisely what we should be doing? How did we stray far from that? How did we get into a space where we have to be concerned about altering our appearance to be our most desirable, watching what we say to be desirable, you know, focusing every ounce of attention on centering the package that we present to a potential partner? To me, that feels like a game, and that feels like an uncomfortable stretching and remolding of who I am into someone I'm not. So to me, it's not a game. To me, it is something that's allowed to be serious. It's allowed to matter a lot. And I don't think that I am getting in my own way by taking my future relationships seriously and by allowing those to matter to me in a very sincere and serious way.
Hmm. I love that. More points. Because I think it's purposely open to interpretation, like the way that we've branded the show. And when I talk about, yeah, the gamification of dating, and when I, you know, host a show called Dating Games, that is often assumed to be fun because we try and make the show fun and have serious conversations about often pretty, you know, massive parts of our lives that have huge personal impacts on us and can take a lot of recovering from. We try and explore those through a way that can be chatty and there can be jokes and frivolity. But one thing I would say is when I talk about this stuff, people can't assume that I mean Dating Games as a good thing, because absolutely it can be too gamified. So no, I appreciate that. You're so great with your answers. So my rule of the game, if we want to interpret that, is I think it's really fun and really helpful to explore parts of your singledom by getting in touch with what you like about your independence, getting comfortable with independence, which can be its own journey, which I've very much had to work on as well. By exploring what we find to love about that, we can also explore where that belongs in a relationship, because absolutely, compromise is important. Communication, it's very possible and good to compromise, but that shouldn't be compromising who we are or what we want. And so if we can find what makes a happy us independently and find ways to bring that into a relationship, I think that's a big way for two people to be happy together.
Totally agree.
All right, well, we will wrap up there. Thank you so much for being such a wonderful guest, for phrasing a lot of things that I've been thinking about a lot and not quite known how to sort of like forge some of this conversation so well. So, yeah.
Thank you so much. It's my pleasure.
And if people want to find you online, we haven't even got to talk about the book. And that is an incredible way for people to explore this idea of singledom and all the power and strength we can draw from it in a way that is so practical and so fun. And so, yeah, if people want more of that, if they feel they need a bit of a like extra nudge and a framework to handhold them a little bit through countering the culture, which we've had a lot of practice doing, I think the book too.
Yeah, if any part of this perspective shifting appeals to you, there is so much more of it in my book. It is called A Single Revolution, Don't Look for a Match, Light One, and it is available on Amazon all over the world.
All right, well, we'll wrap up there and we'll be back to our bit behind the paywall in a moment. I'm not sure what we're talking about yet. It'll be a surprise for the subscribers. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening.
You can support the show, get ad-free episodes and bonus content by joining our new subscription on Apple Podcasts.
This replaces our Patreon and it's slightly cheaper.
Our show is edited and produced by Pete Murta,
with music by the brilliant Tessa Violet.
Speak to you next Friday. Until then, good luck out there.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen, brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Love espresso, drip coffee, and cold brew? With the Ninja Luxe Cafe, if you can crave it, you can brew it. Espresso? Balanced. Drip coffee? Rich. Cold brew? In a flash. With Barista Assist technology, you brew with no stress and no guesswork. And make perfect silky microfoam hands-free from dairy or plant-based milks. Bring the coffee house home and unlock your favorites with the Ninja Luxe Cafe.